You're listening to the Marketing Analytics Show brought to you by Supermetrics. Welcome to another episode of the Marketing Analytics Show, the podcast that helps you get better at marketing analytics. This podcast is brought to you by Supermetrics. Over 500,000 marketers use Supermetrics to move data from popular marketing platforms such as Facebook, Google Analytics, and HubSpot to their favorite analytics, reporting, and data warehouse tools, including Google Sheets, Excel, Google Data Studio, Google BigQuery, and more. Give Supermetrics a spin and start your 14-day free trial at supermetrics.com. I'm your host, Anna Schutko, and today our guest star is Dwayne Brown, a founder and head of strategy at Take Some Risk, Inc., where he worked with brands such as Birdies, WooCommerce, and Walmart, among others. Today, we'll talk about Shopify marketing and reporting, and from this episode, you'll learn what kind of reports you should have in place to measure the success of your Shopify campaigns, how to keep track of the pulse of your Shopify store, and what key metrics to pay attention to, why Dwayne thinks add-to-cart CPA is your new North Star of the marketing spend, and finally, what you can do with the data about recurring orders. I hope you'll enjoy this episode. Hello, Dwayne, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Anna.
Awesome. I'm excited about this episode. And to kick things off, let's start with the first question. So first of all, what kind of setup should you have in place before you start reporting on your Shopify data? And maybe you could tell us, is there anything specific, you know, marketers should pay attention to?
Yeah, so AutoClients, when we take them on, we make sure that all of the apps they have installed work and are set up correctly, whether it's apps that connect to, you know, Facebook or Google or any of the ad platforms. You know, make sure they have Google Analytics set up correctly as well. To Shopify, you'll be shocked how many times those things are not set up correctly or not connected. And then even just within their store, make sure things are tagged correctly, whether it's size. We've seen stores that have, you know, size spelled out as the word, so S-M-A-L-L, but then also size just as the big S. So just making sure little things like that are consistent across the store whenever possible, because if you want to be able to pull data and understand, you know, who's buying, what sizes, what money's being made where, you need to make sure that just your store is set up correctly. It's connected to the different technology platforms that you're going to use to run your campaigns. And then obviously, outside the obvious, like a site that functions and looks great helps as well to just make sure you can get sales.
All right, great. And now let's talk a bit about the reporting part. So first of all, what kind of report should you have in place to measure the success of your Shopify campaigns? And as a follow-up question, maybe you could tell us more about the metrics. So which key metrics should you pay attention to if you want to, you know, track the pulse of your Shopify store, so to say?
Yeah, totally. So whenever you run campaigns across any of the app platforms, whether it's Snap or Facebook or Google, you know, a big thing we look for is just revenue, like how much money is the store making? If you're spending $2,000 a month in advertising on a platform, but your store is only making $1,000 a day, right? Like $2,000 a day in ads and $1,000 a day in revenue, that's not a really good combination, because obviously that means you're losing $1,000 a day in ads. So one of the big things we look for is, like, is the store just making enough money to make sure they can support not only just spending money on advertising, but paying our fees, paying people on the team. So revenue is a big metric. And then beyond revenue, we also look at just the profit margin, right? Client that has an 80% profit margin, which is pretty high, is a lot different than a client that has a 20% profit margin. So understanding, you know, what return on ad spend when we run campaigns does a client need to have in order for it to be successful? Obviously, clients that have tons of sales every month, it's a lot easier to get a better return on ad spend because people like a sale, people will buy more when there's a sale. But we work really hard with our clients not to rely on sales to drive the business. And so when we run campaigns, it's making sure we're getting people who want to pay full price for the product, because that just builds better business in the long run. And that just leads to also just understanding how many net new customers are coming to the business versus returning customers. You know, yes, returning customers and retention is really important for a business, but you also need to add new people to the business so you can just grow the business as a whole and afford to pay everybody on the team. So we look at revenue to start. We also look at just net new customers versus returning customers, and look at all that revenue numbers versus like what we're spending on advertising.
All right. Yeah, I actually do very much like the idea of the revenue orientation there. And now if we talk a bit more about, you know, spend, cost, revenue metrics. So you mentioned previously that add-to-cart CPA is your new North Star of marketing spend. So could you please elaborate on that and tell us why you think so?
Totally. So when you're running campaigns across any ad platform, and when you run a website that these campaigns send to is an e-commerce website, you know, one of the first things you want to get people to do is add something to a shopping cart, right? If people don't add to a shopping cart, they can't check out. If they can't check out, they can't purchase. And when we run campaigns for clients, we're always trying to understand what is the add to cart CPA or cost acquisition to get someone to add to a cart. A good example would be if you spent $100 and only two people added to cart, that means your add to cart CPA is $50. Conversely, if you spent that same $100, but you got 10 people add to cart, then your add to cart CPA is $10. And that's really important to understand, because if your average order value is only $75, $150, spending $50 for each add to cart cost is way too high. You'll never be able to become profitable because you're just spending so much on getting someone to add to a shopping cart. And so that cost we look at as one of the first things to understand, like, is this ad resonating with this audience? It could be a great creative. It could be the best ad copy. The website could be amazing. But if you pick the wrong audience to show an ad to, it's just not going to convert. And so we're always looking at add to cart cost, understand what we're spending there. And then obviously, as we understand what our add to cart cost is, we look at, you know, are people checking out and are people purchasing? It doesn't happen often, but at times we've seen clients get tons of add to cart on an ad, but then nobody checks out and nobody purchases. And so you always want to make sure you don't have one of those ads that like are great for getting people out to cart, but just never lead to any actions farther down into the funnel. And once we have the add to cart cost CPA in line, we start to obviously look at, you know, what is our ROAS or return on ad spend, i.e. for every dollar I spend in ads, how much I'm getting back. You know, that leads to, you know, what I said obviously a second ago is how much revenue are we bringing into the store? You know, are we bringing in new customers versus returning customers. And so add to cart cost is like the first thing we look at. But like we started this podcast today, there's so many things we'll get farther down into the funnel when we get to just the business as a whole to make sure that like at each step, we're not actually just become unprofitable. Because it's sometimes easy when you're in an e-commerce store to just like look at your top line numbers and not dig into it to make sure that those numbers actually make sense and you're actually running a profitable business. And so you always got to know your numbers of like, percentage of returning customers, net customers, you know, what's your profitability margin, how much money you're spending on advertising versus how much money you're making in your store. And when you know all these numbers, it becomes a lot easier to run a more profitable business.
Yeah, definitely. And I am very much supportive of the idea of looking at the business more holistically and putting all those different metrics into context and thinking about this. And now if we move a bit, you know, further down the funnel, and talk about the orders. So recurring orders. In your opinion, how many days is the optimal amount of time between a customer's first and second order? And maybe if you could cover different scenarios, that would be great. And my follow-up question would be, what can you actually do with this data? So in what ways can you analyze this data?
Sure, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, obviously, the distance between someone's first purchase and second purchase is going to vary from store to store. We've had some clients where it's, you know, 30 days or less because they're selling, let's say, a convenience type item. They're selling, let's say, candles or skincare. So people need to order that more consistently. You know, we have other clients where the distance between someone's first order and second order is like 6 months because they're selling some sort of clothing that you just don't buy more than every 6 months or every year. So obviously the distance between those is different, but that's a good number to know because it helps you understand, you know, how long is it going to take you to maybe make money back on what you spent. If it cost you $100 to acquire a customer and for some reason each customer always spends $100 and you need that second purchase for them to be a profitable acquisition of customer, it helps you understand how long it's going to take for you to make money off that customer. But the other thing you can do with that data is you can start to show them retargeting ads. If you sell products that people buy on a pretty consistent basis, you know, every month, every 2 months, every quarter, you could set up your email marketing and your paid ads to show people ads when they've hit their 30 days, 60 days, 90 days and have them come back and make that second purchase or that third purchase. So it's good metric to know just how often people buy from you and how often they come back as an average. And then you can use that to show them ads, whether it's on Facebook, Google. You can use it to send them an email from your email marketing platform, whether it's, you know, Klaviyo or MailChimp, because any business isn't going to, in the long run, survive if all you have to do is acquire one-off purchases. You want to work really hard to get those one-off purchases and then turn them into customers who come back for a second and third purchase.
Awesome. And now let's talk a bit more about the metrics that support that conversion and support, you know, helping customers make recurring purchases. So the average order value, and also you mentioned previously that it is a key metric. So could you please elaborate more on why your average order value is actually a key metric?
Yeah, it's an important metric because it helps you understand, you know, how much you can spend on advertising. So if you know your profit margin is 20% and you know your average order value is $100, well, that means you only have 20% margin in your product to probably spend on advertising if you want to break even, because the other 80% of your costs are going towards just like getting the product out the door into the customer. So knowing what your average order value helps you figure out, based on your profit margin, how much money can you spend on ads and everything else that isn't directly related to producing the product and getting it out the door to the customer. And so that's an important metric, because if your profit margin is only 20% and your average order value is only $100, you only have $20 to spend. Well, spending $30 or $40 to acquire a customer, unless you've got like tons of money in the bank, is probably not the most profitable way to run a business. And so we use the average order value to help us understand like profitability numbers and what we can spend on acquiring a customer. Obviously, just because your profit margin is 20% and you've got $20 to spend doesn't mean that you can realistically acquire a customer for $20 in any ad platform, right? Sometimes people sell products, or create products at a certain cost that is just makes it really hard to acquire a customer at the price point they need. But at least you know what those numbers are, and you can have that discussion with your, you know, marketing person internally, with your agency, freelancer, contractor that you use externally to understand, like, can you use paid ads to build your business? And if you can't use paid ads, that's not the end of the world. There's, you know, SEO, PR, there's also other ways you can grow a business outside of paid ads. But obviously, I'm biased because I run an agency that handles paid ads. And so I think it's like a great way to run a business if you've got the margins to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And now let's talk about the promotion side of it a bit more. So with Black Friday passing, could you please tell us if there's something special you should look out for during major sales promos like Black Friday? And maybe this is something our audience can learn from and use for their Christmas promotions.
Yeah, I think Black Friday, obviously, special in a lot of ways. It's at least in North America, it's a big time for people to both shop, but also just have sales in general, like brands have sales. And so I think a couple things people need to understand about Black Friday is, the first one's going to be controversial to some people, but I don't think it should be, is like not every brand needs to participate in Black Friday. Just because your competitors are doing a Black Friday deal doesn't mean you need to do one. You know, part of strategy and part of understanding your business is understanding what you are and what you are not going to do. And even if you're all your competitors do something for Black Friday, you could decide we're not going to do anything. Even if you've done things in the past for Black Friday, it doesn't mean you had to participate this past year. And the other thing to keep in mind is, especially if you're not a large conglomerate, you know, we saw a lot of brands run sales from like the Monday before Black Friday or the whole month of November or for 3 weeks. It's easier to run a week, 2-3 week long sale when you're a big brand, you sell lots of products, than if you're a small brand and you make, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 million a year. And so understanding that you to compete, it's probably better to run a shorter sale versus trying to compete with big brands and run a week long sale or 2 week sale. And so the first thing really is understanding, like, do you want to participate in Black Friday? And if so, how can you differentiate yourself? Because a shorter sale is going to create more urgency than having a longer sale where you give people 2 weeks to buy a product or a week to buy a product. And then beyond there, I think there's a lot of advertising fatigue. And so making both your sales promotion, if you're going to have it, very unique, but also making creative that stands out in the marketplace. If your creative looks like everybody else, if your offer is just 20% off your site like everybody else, it becomes a lot harder to stand out. People are going to go to you because you've got a good offer and you've got good ads. But if you don't have a good offer and you don't have good ads, you're not going to make as much money. And then the final two things is, ironically, for a lot of businesses, the Cyber Monday after Black Friday is usually a bigger sales day. So having money left over, potentially product left over on the Monday to drive sales is really great. We've got a few fashion brands, and they did way better on the Cyber Monday than they did on the Black Friday. And then even after Black Friday, just understanding that people are probably fatigued from seeing ads for the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And so you may want to pull back on your ad spend for, you know, that week after Cyber Monday, at least for the first few days, so that you're not just spending money when people are not converting. But then you also want to start to think about, you know, what are you going to do for us for the holidays? Because you don't want to have another sale in December, right? So if you're going to have a sale for Black Friday, how is it unique and how is it going to sustain you to the end of the year so you don't have to have another sale in December? Because having two sales close together is really bad for business. And then I think the last thing, which is kind of interesting, and we did it this year with a client, is if you don't want to have a sale and you don't want to do anything for Black Friday, you could launch a new product. So we worked with the client to launch a product on the Thursday before Black Friday. It wasn't planned until, you know, the month out because there was just late shipments on inventory coming in. But we decided, okay, well, if it's going to come in late, why don't we not do anything for Black Friday or Cyber Monday, have any kind of sale, launch this product because we know that we can differentiate ourselves from our competitors by not having a sale, launch a new product. People love to consume and people love to like have something their friends don't have. And so launch a new product was our way to differentiate ourselves in the market, compete with all the sales ads, and drive a good number of sales. We were all really happy with the number of units we sold. We sold over six figures over a few days of revenue, and we didn't have to have a sale or discount the product, and people gladly paid full price. And so Black Friday is a special time of year, but you've got to understand how you're going to compete and how you're going to be different as a brand. And you have to understand, you know, should you even compete in Black Friday? Because if you're just like every other brand in your market that you compete with, you're not going to stand out. And if you don't stand out, you're not going to build a business.
All right. Yeah, it sounds awesome. And I also really like that approach of thinking about your health sales strategy more holistically. And actually, I got another question that popped up in my mind. So you were just then talking about, you know, short-term promotions for like Friday or Cyber Monday. And also previously, you mentioned that, of course, it's very important to cultivate a relationship with the customer so there are repeat purchases. So it's not just, you know, like a one-off purchase to justify your ROI or ROAS in this case. So could you please share your thoughts about cultivating this relationship? So maybe some tips on what creatives, marketers could create or look into, or maybe some other interesting ideas of how the brand should actually try building this relationship with the customers that leads to repeat purchases.
I think a big part of that, you see it this year, is the brands that, you know, tweaked or changed their ad copy for the moment. So i.e., you know, during the early parts of the pandemic and even into summer, people, you know, focused more on comfortability and having products, especially if you sold like sweats or activewear, that realize that people are working from home or people are stressed. So let's tweak our copy about how our product, if your product can do this, can help people just be less stressed. I think that's a great way to help cultivate better relationships with your customers or potential customers is acknowledging the moments that we're in as moments come up. And if your product can help support people in a realistic way, then have it do that. But then I think also just the little things, responding to people's comments when they leave a comment on your Facebook ad or your Instagram ad, or if you've got advertising that people say are, you know, let's say racist or homophobic or things of that nature, like taking a stronger lens and start to look at your advertising and understand, like, is our advertising, you know, causing issues or problems? You know, oftentimes brands just want to be like, we're a brand, we're not a person, but like, may not be a person, but you're advertising to people and you should want to like treat people with respect and things of that nature. So a lot of times we look at how can we just have our advertising or ad copy resonate with people in the moment of what's going on in the world and acknowledge what's going on in the world. We don't work or have jobs that are in a vortex. And then trying to respond to people's comments as much as you can. On Facebook and Instagram, obviously you can't always respond to every comment. It's not the easiest system to manage comments on Facebook ads. I'll be the first to admit that. And even though we don't do it for clients, we talk about it with clients because we see the ads when we just check like how the ads are doing, or we see the comments when we just check how the ads are doing. So those are two things I'd look out for if I was going to try to cultivate a relationship. You know, write ad copy that's in the moment and try to get clients to respond to ads and comments on Facebook to show that they like, they care.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Dwayne. It was really, really interesting to hear all your thoughts about e-commerce metrics tracking and reporting. And now if the audience wants to learn more about you and about your business, where can they find you?
Totally. So there's our agency website, takesomerisk.com. There's no S at the end of risk. And then I spend a lot of time on Twitter. So just Dwayne Brown on Twitter. Those are probably the two best ways to reach out to us. I do spend time on Reddit. There's a PPC subthread for Reddit. So I spend some time on there. But usually it's Reddit or emails. People want to chat with me. And I also love, you know, video chats or just having like non-text related chats with people as well, because sometimes I can go days without chatting with anyone. And being a single male who lives alone, it is good to have like chats with people.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Dwayne.
No, thanks for having me, Anna.
And that's the end of today's episode. Thanks for tuning in. Before you go, make sure to hit the subscribe button and leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. If you'd like to kickstart your marketing analytics, check out the 14-day free trial at supermetrics.com. See you in the next episode of the Marketing Analytics Show.